You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to day two of the week-long first anniversary picnic celebration.
That's
Did you bring
right.
your covered dish?
Well, it's going to have to be cold tonight because they turned off the gas here in the bunker. It's a national showdown!
We had panel vans, panel trucks, and pickup trucks all parked outside. Men wandering about, digging holes in the ground, staring at them, eating their lunches, and then leaving and coming back again.
Smoking Morley's?
I don't know. Well, I saw no smoking, which is probably best, considering I could smell gas while they were working.
Once they confirmed the presence of the gas leak, then they stopped smoking.
That's right. Hey, there is gas. but anyway, they got it all fixed. They replaced the line, and now there's a very nice gentleman outside replacing our meter. Then he's going to come in and light the pilot light on our furnace, and he seems to like dogs, so we're
assuming that he's okay.
He did not bring a covered dish.
No, but...
But since he is restoring our ability to cook, I suppose we'll
come
along.
Let him back
in,
sure. Well, it's March the 7th of 2006, about a quarter past 7, bunker standard time, 0115 Greenwich Mean.
Oh, the math you do in your head so fast.
I know.
Yeah.
All those years in high school, Mr. Grismer knew what he was talking about.
He did.
He was going to come in handy someday.
And where is Mr. Grismer today? That's what I want to know.
The old teacher's retirement home, I suspect.
Yes.
Well, lots of stuff to talk about today before we get to our interview with Barry Chamish, investigative reporter in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there are a lot of interesting things happening in that part of the world as well. So, well, let's start off with the Dubai ports deal, which has really got some people cheesed. I mean, this thing isn't dying down.
No, it isn't. You know, and this story that we posted to Watcher today, I think, encapsulates what's really going on. And
yes.
that is so much more than you're being told. In other words, if it's in the news and they're all talking about it, then stop looking where you're being told to look.
Exactly. It's a misdirection ploy. It's like watching the guy with the little table and the three cups, and you have to figure out which one the ball is under. His hands are moving in such a way as to draw your eyes in a certain way. Well, that's how it works in the mainstream media.
Yep.
They're directing you over here, while, in fact, the real action is happening over here. And Sharon pointed out and picked up a great article today, which was published by the online journal Devin Buckley, the author. And it relates to something that we've been aware of for some time, and we're going to try to get a hold of the lady who did the original research into
this. She is amazing.
Yeah.
She's, in fact, it was her interview that we listened to one night and caused us to write, well, it's not – well, actually, it's a frightening sort of little –
It's a 4-foot by 8-foot the whiteboard on the wall.
Yes.
And
the wall
Norm,
of paranoia is what it's
called. Nicole had her 16th birthday party here last weekend, and her friends stood and kind of looked at that for a while, and finally one of them picked up – one of the marking pens and wrote "Wall of Paranoia" up at the top.
You know, we should take a photograph, a digital picture of this and post this, because this is something that we wrote at the time, and we were shocked at all the names and places she was coming up with.
We're talking
interconnect.
Yeah, we're talking about Indira Singh, and the interview was with Michael Corbin of the Daily Talk Show for A Closer Look, which in my mind is some of the best radio available today.
Yep.
And Paul Collins and Philip Collins, regular guests here on PID Radio, are regular guests of Michael. In fact, they've contributed an article to his new journal. He's just started a journal monthly called the ACL Journal, and they've got an article in there that is excellent. Talks about how all of the guys who were involved in the PR division for the Army in World War II went on to careers in the media and Hollywood.
Shaping how do you how spell PSYOPs?
Yeah. So anyway, what Indira Singh did was she found out through her work in risk management, risk assessment for J.P. Morgan
yes,
in New York City.
That's right.
that a company that they were preparing to buy some software from called PTECH, that's P-T-E-C-H, out of Boston, had connections to characters who had been labeled as terrorists or potential terrorists by the United States government.
PTECH is now called Go Agile, by the way.
Yeah, and their website looks very nifty. I mean, you know, like a good software company should, actually. They supply enterprise software, basically the backbone for corporate networks, the backbone software. There is some indication that their enterprise software was based on the Promise software that came from the U.S. Department of Justice, which stole it, basically.
If you've ever heard the stories of, of Danny Casolaro and
Michael Reconosciuto,
these all involve Promise software, and they actually dovetail into the whole Presidio and the Indian Reservation.
Oh, the Cabazon Indian Reservation in California. It's called the Octopus, and that was the working title of the book that Danny Casolaro was working on. He was an investigative reporter who was found suicided at a motel in West Virginia when he was supposed to be meeting a contact. Anyway, Indira Singh began investigating and found money trails that connected this company, PTECH, to Al-Qaeda, basically. And it turned out that the FBI was on this trail also. And it's really a convoluted story, but what it boils down to is this. Certain elements of the United States government knew about PTECH and its connections to Al-Qaeda and its financiers. They also knew that PTECH was supplying this enterprise software. And basically, when you're controlling the software for a company's network, you have an open door into that company's data.
Oh, yeah.
Well, consider,
it's sort of like running the port in a country.
Yes, yes. It gives you access to whatever you want. Now, imagine that this company is also providing software to the United States government, the FAA, the Department of Justice, the Department of Energy, Congress, the Naval Air Command, the Air Force, the United States Army, the FBI, Secret Service, and the White House.
And you said that all without a breath.
Well, you know, 20 years of singing with a barbershop quartet. You know,
I
you learn how to sing that Acapulco music.
And, oh, by the way, if you do hear a grinding noise in the background, it is not Derek's stomach. You know, we even though, of course, we haven't yet gotten a really decent covered dish and the gas isn't on here, it's the gas man outside.
So this company supplied software to all of these government agencies, despite the fact that the FBI at its investigative level was aware of the financial connections between it and Al-Qaeda. Indira Singh tried to raise this issue with the FBI, and the investigation rose to a certain level and then was squashed. It was kiboshed.
I'm shocked.
Yes. Now, we bring in another investigator who is connecting a lot of dots on the internet and whose blog you should read every day, Jeff Wells, Canadian author, his blog called Rigorous Intuition.
Yep.
He pulled together a number of articles. And again, this is information that's available on the web, but you're not going to see any of this on your local, on your cable news networks. Michael Chertoff was responsible for killing this investigation. Chertoff happened to be the with the Department of Justice and responsible for the investigation into those financial dealings between PTECH and Al-Qaeda.
Chertoff, whose days may be numbered, I think he's about to take the fall for something.
He doesn't seem to be getting a lot of good press this week, does he?
No.
Well, he was the criminal division chief at the Department of Justice when this company, PTECH, located in Boston, was being investigated by the FBI. He basically pulled rank, grabbed the investigation out of the FBI's hands, and then killed it. PTECH is still in business. It has never been charged with anything and still doing business today under a new name, of course, Go Agile. And meanwhile, the connections between PTECH and what was going on 9/11 have yet to be explained to the American public, because apparently there is some indications, there are some indications, Michael Rupert has done some investigating into this and some writing on this, that the software supplied by PTECH to the FAA in operation at Logan Airport on 9/11, from which two of the 9/11 planes took off.
Yes, and according to Carl Schwartz, was it Carl? Who
Carl
told
Schwartz.
Us that one of them went east.
Two of them went east. that those weren't the actual planes that hit the World Trade Center, that those two flights went out and disappeared out over the Atlantic Ocean. Mm-hmm. So there is some indication that this software was used to confuse things long enough at Logan Airport for the 9/11 plot to take place. We will put links to all of this in the show notes, because I know this is a lot to swallow in the span of the first 9 minutes and 42 seconds of the podcast.
Yeah, I know.
So in any case, but
don't even have salt or pepper here.
Right. And how did we get here from the Dubai Ports World deal? The point is, this is all a show. Mm-hmm. There is no real war on terror. There is no real war on terror. If there was, this company's connection to Al-Qaeda and the fact that it supplied infrastructure software to many of our government's most sensitive operations would have been investigated, and it would have happened 5 years ago.
Yeah. You know, there is another story on Watcher Magazine right now that I think goes along with that idea of there is no war on terror.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly there is no real civil war
that's in Iraq,
about to take place in Iraq. Rigo's Intuition, which you mentioned a few minutes ago, Jeff Wells, had an article on his site today called Iraq's Hutu Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're familiar with the movie Hotel Rwanda, it tells the story of the Tutsis and the Hutu war that took place. And it was the Tutsis were just mowed down. They were macheted, just thousands of them.
About 900,000, yeah, almost a million. Yeah.
It was just incredible. And the signal came over the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And he, I think, makes a good comparison here, because that whole thing, I think, was set up.
Mm-hmm.
And the UN just threw up their hands and said, oh, I'm so sorry.
Yep.
We can't do anything about this.
Mm-hmm.
It had been provoked by an outsider. So that seems to be what's going on here. And he quotes another blogger from the same blogging service, Blogspot, who calls himself Hammurabi, and Sam Hammurabi, and even I think he misspells it. Isn't Hammurabi M-U-R-A-B-I instead of M-O?
But, well, you know, an ancient Babylon spelling was sort
U-A,
of phonetic.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I think it's really interesting, since isn't Hammurabi the set of laws?
Hammurabi was the first real king of Babylon,
right?
Who set up the Code of Hammurabi.
And then we have Sam, which is Uncle Sam.
Mm-hmm.
So isn't that an interesting name to have on?
Yes, it sure is.
That's what
is.
I thought too. Anyway, he refers to this gentleman who is, or you know, could be a woman, this person calling him herself Sam Hammurabi, as blaming the locals on what's going on. In other words, saying that it really is Sunni on Shiite.
Yeah, he mentioned a story in which the handcuffed and headless bodies of 100 Shias were supposedly taken from Karbala to South Baghdad.
And his source, his blog, is the only source for that story.
The only source, and it is linked to by Fox News, The Washington Times, the Memory, which is the Middle Eastern Media Research Institute, and the United States Embassy.
Right.
So there are a lot of big hitters giving this guy's blog credit. But here's the thing. This blog is the only source for this information.
Right.
The only source.
And back in 2004, October 2004, same sort of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Hammurabi posted graphic images of children killed by a Zarqawi.
Right.
Zarqawi bombing in Baghdad. And Reuters was right there when it supposedly happened.
Mm-hmm.
Reuters didn't film it. Reuters didn't write about it.
No. What they found, however, was that the picture that Hammurabi put on this blog as, you know, the victims of the Zarqawi bombing had been published by Reuters as victims of a United States airstrike.
Exactly. And that is insidious. Now, we had a story a couple of days ago about how propaganda is being filtered through blogs.
Right. And, you know, I forgot to mention this to you, and I don't know if I showed this email to you, but the day after we talked about CENTCOM...
You talked to me about this. This is great. We didn't say anything.
We didn't mention this on the podcast, and we should have. CENTCOM is set up a blogging division to engage the blogosphere and correct misinformation about what the United States military is doing out there.
Uh-huh.
The day after we talked about it, we got an email from a gentleman in the service. And I'll see if I can pull up the email here. Well, I closed out my email client. But we got an email from a gentleman, a soldier who is working on that unit. And he thanked us for the mention and kindly asked if we would provide a link to centcom.mil in the show notes. And again, as a young man is doing his job, so we are not going to ridicule him because he's
doing his job.
And we do appreciate the fact that he stepped up and volunteered. I had the opportunity to volunteer when I was his age. I didn't do it. I respect him greatly for doing it. But the point is that the military's use of the media for PSYOPs is something that has it's been done for generations, for ages, for years. And it has been honed into a science since World War II. And this is just the latest incarnation of it. So when you're looking to the web for information, a couple of years ago, you'd think that the bloggers served as sort of a counterweight to the mainstream networks. Well, the disinfo and COINTELPRO types have figured it out. And at least the guys at CENTCOM are being honest and saying, hi, we're with the military and we're here to help. You can use the images from our site. And just if you have any questions, feel free to contact us anytime. Great. But then you've got these guys like this Hammurabi out there who is saying that there are massacres taking place and assigning blame. And the net result is going to be that a certain percentage of people will take this seriously and decide that they need to get out and take revenge. You know, a group of Shias may take it upon themselves to go into a Sunni neighborhood and shoot some things up. And mm-hmm. then the cycle begins and continues. Somebody is trying to provoke something there, which is something we've speculated about since last fall when those two British Special Forces guys were caught in Basra in Arab garb.
Mm-hmm.
What were they trying to do? Were they trying to stir something up between Iraq and Iran, since Basra is relatively close to the Iranian border? Mm-hmm. Or were they trying to stir up some sectarian violence?
I don't know. You know, in a related story, apparently there are rumors floating around, and I could only find the WorldNet Daily source on this, so we'll have to see what really comes out of this. But there is a group in Palestine saying that a very great chief is on the scene and will soon make his presence known to the world. Is there now among us a person like Saladin, like Sheikh Osama bin Laden, like Abu Musab Sarkawi? The answer is yes. We have this man, and he will appear with the help of Allah very soon on the land of Palestine. Interesting, isn't it?
That is very interesting.
Yeah, there's a pamphlet going around all over the place out there with this information on it.
Well, things are definitely getting more interesting in the Middle East. There is no question about it.
But it goes on. It's more than just that quote in this pamphlet that is circulating throughout Palestine. The group threatened the Palestinian police and security services, told them that there are planned activities. They are warning all foreigners who are not Muslims to get out of Islamic land. And they say that there will be a, quote, great war for the purity of the land of Islam in Palestine. This is a huge threat if this is true.
That does carry a lot of weight.
It carries a lot of weight, and we're also coming up on the Israeli elections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the acting Prime Minister Olmert now making claims that that he's going to begin withdrawing from the West Bank, which is something that Prime Minister Sharon
had said he would not do. He promised Jordan he would not do that because Jordan doesn't want Israel to leave the West Bank.
That's right. We just go back into fairly recent history, and the Jordanians threw the Palestinians out. And the Palestinians, this was back in the late 70s, King Hussein finally had enough, and the Palestinians turned around, crossed the Jordan, and surrendered to the Israelis because they knew they'd get better treatment.
All eyes should be on the Middle East over the next couple of weeks, as if they aren't already, but really pay attention to what's going on. There will be clues like this appearing, I'm convinced of it, because we're coming up on the vernal equinox, which is a huge, day for sacrifices.
March 20th or the 21st?
I think it's the 21st. But we can double check on that. That is just about coinciding with, it's about the same time as the Israeli elections, which I think are on the 24th, and about the same time that this oil bourse is supposed to come online. And it's about the same time that Russia announced that the United States plans on attacking Iran. There are a lot of things coming to fruition, coming to a head almost simultaneously in the next few weeks.
It is the 21st, which is, as you say, on or about the time that the Iranian oil bourse was supposed to start up. So, yeah, there are a lot of things that are coming to fruition. And I guess, well, this would be the time that we should lead into our interview with Barry Chamish.
Yeah. You know what? We spoke with him on Sunday. Mm-hmm. He is still recovering from what really could have been a really devastating stroke. It's miraculous to me. And I even tell him in the interview that to me, he's a living miracle. And he sort of thought that was sort of a funny comment. But to me, he really is, because he's recovered. And to me, if you put it against what happened to Ariel Sharon, the contrast is so drastic. Here, Barry Chamish is, he's doing his best to speak what he feels are truths that other people are afraid to say. Mm-hmm. And he's struck down by a stroke, and he refuses to, you know, to stop.
Yeah.
I will warn you, he's still recovering his speech. His voice tires out pretty easily. Mm-hmm. There are times, and it possibly could have been the connection we had with Israel over our telephone. But there are a few times where you may have to back up and listen again just to make sure you get everything he says, because trust me, what he says is of great import. So without further ado, here's our interview with Barry Chamish.
We're pleased to welcome to our guest line author and investigative journalist Barry Chamish from Israel. Barry, thank you for joining us on PID Radio.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, how are you doing today? We've heard that you've had a few physical problems, but it sounds like you're doing all right today, Barry.
Quite a lot better. I had a stroke a couple weeks ago, and I had no voice whatsoever last week. And now I've got, 60% back.
Praise God. You've had a lot of people praying for you.
Word has gotten around. Word has gotten around through the grapevine and the internet that you had suffered the stroke, and so a lot of people were concerned and praying for your recovery. So
That's very kind of people. I've been kind of putting it aside, and I haven't been answering my emails. And well, I can, but it hurts.
Yeah,
it takes 5 times as long to do these simple tasks.
Yeah, and I bet you get a lot of email, too.
Yeah, well, my son comes in, and we give kind of a very quick, we'll talk to you next week, or within 10 days, or just something that's feasible. Mm-hmm. And that's been working so far. Next week, it's over with. I got answers. I have to answer them already. It doesn't even matter to me what's going on in the country. I don't care about the elections or the anticipated results. It's all very predictable. The people aren't doing what I would expect them to do, and it really doesn't matter what I do anyway.
Well, before we get into your analysis of what is happening in Israel right now, let's get a little background on you, how you came to be doing what you do now. Are you born in Israel, or where are you from originally?
Originally, Middle Canada.
Canada.
How did a good Canadian boy end up in Israel?
That was 33 years ago. It's not all that interesting. It really is not all that interesting. Stick with today. We're better off.
Well, then answer the burning question. Where is Ariel Sharon? Why did he disappear? I mean, clearly he's still in the hospital, but nobody talks about it.
Yeah, he's awaiting a brain transplant.
Oh my gosh. Do you think he really is still alive?
Not really. It's the way they're reporting it is keeping him alive.
Yeah.
But don't expect him to wake up.
Well, you know that.
In essence, they're at least the way they're reporting is to keep Olmert in the race. Olmert, of course, did kill him with Paris. They did actually murder Sharon. And to keep the two of them running for the top of the land, they have to keep him alive for another 2 weeks. then they can do whatever they want.
Now, you make a statement that Olmert and Peres colluded to take Sharon out.
Yeah.
Is that a common belief in Israel?
No, that is a very common belief. But no one, again, even more common, of course, is that Rabin was knocked out. And that's half the Jews of this country know that.
Yitzhak Rabin was taken out.
Yeah, sure. That's this year was an especially good 10th anniversary year. But half the country agreed in polls that something terrible was done to Rabin. And it's understood in this country that Rabin was knocked out. And who knocked him out, of course, was Peres. Peres killed him, but... And Yoram Reuven, Rabin's bodyguard, brought him, finished him off. He pulled the trigger. Same thing with possibly with Sharon. Reuven was in both cases where Sharon was brought back to the hospital. So you got a professional murderer in Yoram Reuven, and he did it again. And he did for Sharon this time. I'm sorry, he did for Peres and Olmert this time. But,
What does Sharon Peres get out of this? If Shimon Peres...
Olmert and Olmert.
Leaders of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
No, I said Shimon Peres. What does he get out of this? I mean, if he's staying in the background, is he really the one pulling the strings?
What's his thing? He's second in Kadima. He's the second highest ranked leader of the winning party.
Oh.
Okay. So... Now, does he have a different plan for Israel's future than Sharon, or is it just a personal...
No, it isn't even a question of that. Sharon was worked and turned into a leader of the new Israel. What it comes down to is that they're going to destroy Israel. Sharon did a superb job in the first half of his career wrecking Israel. And now Olmert will just take over. Olmert's kids don't even live in this country. His connection to this country is how much he can steal from it, that's all.
Where do his kids live?
New York.
Huh.
In New York?
Yeah.
Now, I see that Olmert is reported that he is going to start evacuating settlements in Judea and Samaria. They're evacuating.
Yeah.
They're going to give over the West Bank now?
Yeah. That's a given. It's just a given. There was a report, supposedly there still is a report, on the race of Amona, where the young Jewish girls were taken aside and raped. Mazuz and Olmert refused to, and Ezra, everyone who was a part of that atrocity is not taking part in the examination of it. It's as simple as that. The very worst of the Jews have taken over the country, and they are going to destroy the religious communities of the West Bank. They've already wrecked Gaza. That'll never come back.
Now, and I remember one of the last things that Ariel Sharon said to Jordan was, "We will not pull out of the West Bank."
When?
It was reported over here just a few days before his quote-unquote stroke.
Well... That's interesting. We already pulled out of the West Bank, so maybe he won't pull up all of the West Bank, but he's going to pull out a big chunk of it. Don't believe anything that is doing the Jordanians any favors. He's doing nobody any favors.
Well, you know, that's why we need to talk to people like you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wish people would listen to me more. I truly do. But the sad fact of the matter is that I gave the ammunition for this country to defend itself.
Mm-hmm.
This country could have defended itself. And we could have fought against, for one thing, against Shimon Peres. We could have brought him to trial.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the people of this country didn't care. They didn't believe in their court or in their police or in anyone. So we lost it. We have no one and nothing to fight for, and that's why we're going to lose this country.
Now, Rabin and Sharon, in your view, were taken out, and you've got evidence in the articles at your website, barrychalmers.com, that detail the cases.
And
here.
Have people write me. I'll send them books, and they can see over 2,500 documents that were given to me over 10 years. I have full details on how the murder took place.
Okay, and this is a good point too.
That's exactly what happened.
This is a good place to mention your email address for people to contact you about your.
Yeah, might be Chamish, Chamish, at netvision. That's one word. netvision.net. net.al. Chamish at netvision.net.al. Yeah, pick up the books. You'll enjoy them very much, I assure you.
Okay. Well, let's step back and take a look at the forest here. What is the big plan then? Why were Rabin and Sharon taken out? What part do their assassinations play in the big picture for Israel?
The big picture is Israel doesn't exist anymore. And that's coming up now very nicely. The big, awful play is that Israel becomes part of the new Middle East created by what you may call the New World Order, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
However you describe it, what you're talking about is Israel doesn't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that are you talking about it becoming a quote-unquote international country where it's all more European than
I'm talking about the entire Middle East becoming a separate, all of the Middle East becomes a country like the EU. That's what they're aiming for. And what you're getting now is you're getting Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, they're all under attack, or planning to be under attack, as is Syria and as is Israel. We're going to see one beautiful, horrible EU, an EU in the Middle East. And we're not going to have little countries anymore. And that's what's going on right now in Afghanistan and Afghanistan and Iraq. In short, that's what's going on in the whole Middle East.
Well,
and Israel is going to disappear.
Well, let me ask you a question regarding Jerusalem itself. I have read that the Pope would like to move at least some of his control to Jerusalem.
Sure.
Now, is that part of that plan?
Well, I have a CD. I give a little lecture in Jerusalem where I just gave the last 2 years of papal plans for Jerusalem, and they're all in one direction. They want to move some of their headquarters to Jerusalem as quick as possible. And this is carrying on to the new German Republic being spread on the floor of today's Jerusalem, taking place every day.
Well,
everything that's been planned for Jerusalem, it's being done today.
Now,
just accept that.
The United States has a base in Israel. Is that correct?
No. The United States built a base. And the Israelis now officially own it.
Oh, okay. The pictures we saw had the U.S. flag over it.
Sure, they were building it.
Okay.
They built an entire base to take care of all the army bases that Israel is not going to have space for. It's as big as half of Tel Aviv.
That's huge.
And it's just outside Tel Aviv.
That is really big. Well, we're building two really big bases in Iraq now.
Was that a shock? First of all, I really can't imagine why, considering you're going to be moving out.
Yeah.
What happened?
No, I think you're right about that.
You're going to move. Really, you're supposed to be moving out any day now. So what are you doing that for?
Well, you need a place to refuel and to launch airplanes, at least until you can build new ones in the countries that you're moving into.
All right. Well, then you'll have two new bases. Look, they take over the Middle East, of the new Middle East, began with 9/11. 9/11 was phony. It was a setup.
Mm-hmm.
It took you a day before you moved troops into Afghanistan. Everything is a setup. The whole thing is.
Well, sure. We talked about that many, many times here, and there's a lot of evidence along that on that score.
By the way, if you hear a dog barking, we have a puppy.
I hear.
Yeah.
That's the
I
one
hear
we talked to you about last week who was feeling so poorly. You can tell she's feeling much, much better today, this week, too. So her recovery and yours seem to be tracking one another.
mine's a little worse than hers, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I've had another 2 weeks.
You know, you're a miracle. I really think you are just a living miracle. And we are so grateful for you.
Thank you, I guess.
Well,
there's plenty of ways to go. Plenty of ways.
Well, just
but nonetheless, the dogs are fine, and in 2 weeks, I'll be improved. And in the meantime, there will be elections, and I'm not following them, and I'm not going to vote, and that's that. I tried one last little attempt to get to the Israeli public interest in the fact that the government is going to sell Judea and Samaria as soon as these elections are over. But nothing. I mean, nothing.
They want to sell them?
There's nothing to do. It's over with. The Israeli mind is so long gone that there's nothing to do.
Well, let me ask this. Do you see Olmert and Perez as believing that giving over the West Bank is a good thing for Israel, or are they just acting as tools of the CFR
well,
or whoever?
Tools. Of course they're acting as tools. That's what they do. And they'll hand over. They'll use our army, and my young children are going to be in that army, and I won't allow it. I will actually ship out of this country. It's a very difficult thing coming up. But I'm not going to allow my children to be used as soldiers for removing Jews from their homes. And that's what's coming up within a month or two. You're going to have the old removal Jews from their homes. And the Israeli people will accept it because they don't know better. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going to be in the next month. I just look forward to this. Mm-hmm. It's awful.
Do you think Olmert will win?
It doesn't matter who wins. It makes no difference whatsoever who wins. They'll put together what they're supposed to do. In this case, if Olmert wins, they'll put together with Kadima. If not, it'll be Netanyahu doing it. But the fact remains that they're going to move out of the West Bank using Labor and Likud to back them. And that's what's happening next. And I can't do a thing about it. And it's not even worth trying. I tried. I spent years trying. It's not worth trying.
You feel like a voice crying in the wilderness?
I worked for a long, long time until I got this, whether it's real or not, what I've got to decide to deliberately give it to me or not deliberately give it to me. But the fact remains that I can't automatically fight these forces anymore. I gave it a great try, and it looked for a while like I might even win this year. But now it's a question of getting my kids out of this country before they have to go in the army, and that's that. I don't think there's much that can be done.
Mm. Well, Barry, you've attracted some attention from some pretty prominent neocon writers here in the United States, Daniel Pipes in particular, and my guess is that the fact that he's devoting time and energy to writing about you
would
indicate that you're getting a little too close for comfort.
Oh, sure. With Pipes, he's been on my case for years. Again, Pipes is a phony, and he's dangerous, and his role is to get the war against the Muslims all How should we put it? He's the one setting it up worldwide. The Jews think he's doing them a favor. Mm-hmm. He's not doing anybody a favor. He's doing what he's told to do. And when you recognize that Pipes is paid for by the CFR, that his so-called think tank is paid for by the CFR, you understand who these people are. It's no big secret. Take away the CFR and he's a nobody. He wouldn't earn 2 cents for anything he does. But you can't take away the CFR. They exist. They pay for his his institute. And that institute is spreading a world war, and that's going to see an awful lot of dead Jews in it.
The lead headline at your website now is called The Pipeline to War, which outlines the connections between Daniel Pipes and the editor of the newspaper in Holland that published those cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Or Denmark, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Denmark.
What is the connection between those guys?
It's not a fluke. It's that simple. It's a deliberate plot built and created around the CFR. And this is what this world is used to. Pipes is not an especially bright person. Not an especially entertaining person. But his father was a big-time intelligence chief. During the Cold War, he was the head of the CIA's Russian, what would they call it then?
Station?
It would be the Russian Cold World. He was in charge of the Russian division of the CIA, okay?
Uh-huh.
And that's how big he was. And had a son. They gave the son a job. Okay? The son has no talents, but he's got a father who had some.
Mm-hmm.
And so they handed this Daniel Pipes money, and this is what he does. That's what he's told to do. And what's very, very worrisome is that the Jews don't choose their leaders. The Jews are given their leaders. And Pipes is one of them. He hasn't been chosen by anybody. He's not choosable. But he's, as I said, a Jewish leader because they chose the leaders for the Jews.
And because he's got credentials behind his name, his words are given weight. And those of us who are
out here on
the fringe.
He was turned into somebody. He was turned into who he's supposed to be. And a lot of attention has been paid to me through him for all the difference it makes. I was so pathetic the way he tries to hide his finaglings, but he does it anyways. But the fact of the matter is it's... he has spent a lot of time on me. He's got himself a real joker, in Israel now, who's now just collapsing in Israel, who's been paid for to bring me down. But it didn't help. The opposite. The more attention I gave, the more readers I got. The more the attention they gave me, the more readers I got who never heard of me before. So whatever the... And whatever they did, it didn't work for them. But they think they got some victories in right-wing Jewish organizations, whatever it's called. And they do. But for every one of those, I've gained 1, 2, 3 in other Jews or of other Christian readers. The point is that he can go on doing whatever he wants. The money's been funneled his way, and he had something to do with those Muslim cartoons. This is almost certain.
Well, Barry, we'll take a break here. We look forward to talking with you again soon and getting into some other topics like the Vatican's maneuverings to take over Jerusalem and possibly even discuss the book that you wrote about the return of the Nephilim to Israel, which would be something that many of our listeners would find interesting. And meanwhile, Barry, we'll keep praying that your strength returns and look forward to talking with you again soon.
Okay. As I say, every day a little more comes back.
Very good.
Well, you take care of yourself, all right?
Great. We'll speak to each other soon.
Thank you very much for talking with us, Barry. Bye-bye.
My pleasure. See you later.
You know, I wish we could have chatted with him more. I know that he was really getting tired, but you know, he graciously said he would speak with us anytime. So we plan on taking him up on that.
Yeah. He said, a couple more weeks, I'll be back to good as new. So he said that we could talk with him then and he'd have plenty to say. So.
He's tough. That's assuming he's still there. He really sounds like he plans on getting out of Dodge.
Well, at least getting his kids out of Dodge.
Yeah.
And if I were in his shoes, I can't say that I would do any different.
No, I wouldn't either. I mean, the fact is over there, if you're not familiar with it, and I bet all our listeners are, it's compulsory service over in Israel, and that's men and women.
Yeah. And he really has a strong disagreement with the use of the military there. In fact, he made a reference to what happened at Amona, and I may have the name of the community wrong, but basically where the army went in and physically threw out settlers from a town in the West Bank that didn't want to leave and got really brutal with some of the people who tried to resist. Mm. So he does not want to see his children put in a position where they have to throw their countrymen off of land that they were promised by the government in the past when they went in to settle. Same thing that recently happened, of course, with the settlers that refused to leave the Gaza Strip.
Yeah.
It's really a difficult situation there. And, of course, there's a lot of history there. It goes all the way back to King Saul.
Oh, we can't. You know, we don't have enough time in the potosphere to go into all of the history that is over there.
It will not be resolved until Jesus returns.
Amen. Well, you know what? We've had a very intense podcast here, a podcast. Let's have a little dessert before we go. A little Krispy Kreme here, a little pie. We've got a story on Watcher Magazine that you really have to see. You got to go there, see the picture, read the story, and we'd love to know what you think of this.
Yeah, the title, the headline, The Time Warp Family Who Walks on All Fours. Apparently, there are some scientists who, well, a family in the Kurdish region of Turkey has been discovered with four children, one man and three women, ranging from age 18 through 34, who, for some reason, walk on all fours. They prefer to walk about on all fours. Now, and sadly, all four of them are mentally challenged. There are some scientists who are taking their condition as an opportunity to prove that humans once walked this way. As, believe it or not, an example of reverse evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm just looking at the pictures of these people here and looking at the way they have to strain in order to see forward.
Right.
And looking at the way their hands and feet are bent.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that they don't look comfortable.
No, they don't. They don't look at ease at all.
No. Legs too long, arms too short, feet and, you know, ankles and wrists bend the wrong way, neck pointed the wrong direction. This is, but supposedly there are scientists who somehow think that this condition is somehow going to show them or give insight into the way our ancestors used to walk. Now, until today, I had never ever heard any evolutionist speculate that mankind once walked on its palms.
No, in fact, what they have been saying is that we walk the way chimpanzees do.
Right, knuckle walkers.
Right.
I mean, and frankly, that, you know, if your knuckles were tough enough to do it, that would be a more comfortable way of doing it because your wrists bend that way.
But chimpanzees have really short
legs. And they have short little legs
and
really long
arms.
Right. Well, supposedly that's where our ancestors came from. No. Now they're looking at these people who are walking around with hind ends way up in the air. You know, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. But it shows the lengths to which some will go to prove a point.
I know. So we think that this story was cooked. We really do.
It does. It does look like it's really bizarre. And there's some controversy about it. But you can do some searching on it once you read the article here at Watcher and find out for yourself. Yeah, my first reaction when I saw it is like, is this April 1st?
I know. That's what I thought. Okay, did somebody pull out an old April 1st story?
Did this come from Weekly World News or Pravda?
Did this come from The Onion? Well, listen, we asked yesterday if you have had a favorite interview over the last 1 year since we're on our 1 year anniversary.
Yeah, we got a couple of votes for Eric John Phelps.
I know we did. How about that? So if you have a favorite, please send us your note at radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And we invite you to join the forum where we talk about these issues and ideas and just sort of keep each other informed as to what's going on because, frankly, we can't trust the cable news networks to do it. And that's at peeringintodarkness.com. www.ariel.org/forum.
You know, and we don't talk about this very often, but we do both write fiction. And we've got some new books that are going to be coming out over the next month or two, so keep your ears peeled for that. And while you're peeling, peel some apples and bake a pie. Until tomorrow, I'm Sharon Gilbert.
I'm Derek Gilbert. Thanks for listening to PID Radio.
Bye, everybody. Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it loud and clear. A better day is